Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's the Shaletta Show. I'm hoping after this next segment I get to come back. I really do. I might get wrote up by my supervisors, but, you know, I can't speak truth to power about our community if I don't talk about what's going on in the media, what's going on in my own station. There is a lack of diversity and representation in mainstream media, and we've got to do something to fix that. Had Raina Cash on last week, who is now a big-time boss lady in Savannah, left the Star Tribune where she was an editor there in the sports department, went down there and took the helm of the newspaper there in Savannah, and they've got a plan about how they are going to make the newsroom more reflective of the community. I was talking to a friend of mine, Justin Pahowski, who has been partnering with me on projects since, for 15 years. Whether it's online or blogs or podcasting, Justin is a trusted ally and a friend. And, you know, I posted the story from Pointer about the work that the Star Tribune is doing in partnership with the newspaper in San Antonio to make their newsroom more diverse. And Justin said, Shaletta, you've been doing this fight for 15 years. I said, Justin, I was doing this fight in high school at my high school paper. I was doing this fight in college at my college paper. I did this fight as an intern at CBS News Path in New York. Everywhere I go, if I'm the only black person in the room, that's a problem. If the only black people that you have doing news at your organization work on nights and weekends, that's a problem. I remember when Kamala Harris was picked for Joe Biden's vice president. As a candidate for him over the other people who wanted the role. I said, if I hear a white man, professor, political pundit, come on my radio station talking about how black women feel about Kamala Harris and what an impact this has on African-American women in the African-American community, I'm going to burn the station down. I'm not going to lie. I talked about violence. Because I am so sick and tired of stories that concern people of color being ignored and overlooked simply because of the fact that we don't have any diversity in our newsrooms. So I was so excited when I saw the Pointer story. And when I saw that Kendall Harkness, photo editor at the Star Tribune, had went to her bosses after the murder of George Floyd and spoke truth to power, I had to invite her on the show to talk about what she did, the plan that they're implementing, and what the ultimate goal is to create more diversity at our local newspaper here in the Twin Cities. Kendall, thank you so much for being on the Shaletta Show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Girl, you were out there doing some amazing work, capturing some amazing images for the Star Tribune when the murder of George Floyd happened. You've been at the paper, now a photo editor, for more than two decades. Talk to me about your tenure there at the Strip.
Yeah, I came to the paper in 2000 and as a photographer, and you know, just covering all sorts of different things, all sorts of communities. And, you know, I'm originally from New York City. So knowing what it's like to be on a farm in outstate Minnesota, doing all sorts of different, being in all sorts of communities, and I made that move sort of in a pivotal moment from photo editing to from photography to photo editing. I was on the streets when Jamar Clark was killed and photographing during that occupation, and then moved to photo editing right in between, and then wound up being on the desk when Philando Castile was killed. And what that was like in terms of making that transition from person who is capturing the images and talking to communities, being a Black woman and talking to those folks, not having that complete understanding of how the media works and what they do. And a lot of times people of color tend to be the conduit between communities and their newsrooms, doing the explaining on both sides of, well, that's just a part of what it's like in a newspaper. And then explaining to your supervisors and your bosses that this is where this should be going. This is how the story should be told. Please don't use that image because that might either re-injure somebody or re-traumatize somebody. So you're the go-between a lot, doing a lot of explaining. It's like having a second job.
Yeah, it is. Right? It's other duties as assigned for us. How do I address this? How do I talk about this? I was working with my friend Sloan Martin this past week on some stories, and I gave her some numbers to call, and she called and they said, well, they were too busy to talk to her. And I said, you have to realize that these people have been calling you to come out to this event for years and nobody's coming. Finally, somebody's calling. They're tired and they're frustrated and they're upset. I said, please tell them you know me. And if you do that, then they'll talk to you. And so she got the interviews and she talked about what a great engagement that they had and, the pictures that they got and everything that she learned. And so we're the bridge. And that's a heavy load to bear. That's a heavy burden. This person won't talk to me. Can you call them and get them to talk? Shaletta, can you get somebody in your newsroom to cover this story for me? Because I called and they won't answer. They're tugging at us in every direction. How are you handling that? Because I'm exhausted. I am, girl. I'm not going to lie to you. There's no lying on the Shaletta show. I'm exhausted.
Yeah. I think every person of color right now is exhausted. There's really no question about it. Because now it's almost like a blind spot has been, the crack in the door has happened. So now there are all these questions. I was talking to one freelancer who's just like, they couldn't see my work before. They couldn't see the value in what I did. But now I am this, hot commodity.
Oh, girl, we have stuff now, like fish grease on Good Friday. We are hot.
It is crazy. So she's just like, and again, how can you trust that? Like, they're coming at you because they know that they need you now. But how long does that last, right? How, can you trust those relationships when they come pretty much out of nowhere?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're listening to WCCO Radio, one of only three brown-skinned girls in the whole building here. If I need to borrow some lip chap or use somebody's comb at the Good Neighbor Station, there's nobody neighborly. I can't use Susie Jones or Laura Oaks' comb. I can't, Chad ain't got no lotion. He ain't got no cocoa butter. And the Black and brown people who are here are at nights and on weekends, and our newsroom is devoid of any people of color. It's 2020, not 2019, not 1920. Kendall, when I first got here to WCCO Radio, I went to look through some of the photos that they have. They have a large photo gallery because the station's been here 100 years. And 100 years ago, all the on-air announcers and newsroom personnel were white men.
Right.
In 100 years, girl, They have not found a black woman or a black man or a Hmong woman or somebody from the LGBTQ community who is Hispanic that knows how to talk or write a story.
Right.
That is unacceptable. After the murder of George Floyd, you saw something similar in the Star Tribune, and you did what? Talk slow, because I'm taking notes.
Yeah. Well, I think it was one of those moments where we talked to each other. You know, there are not very many of us, but we sort of came together to say, like, okay, you know, change is happening. There's change happening around the country. We watched as the Washington Post and the New York Times and the LA Times were having their own reckonings, and it was time to have ours. And so, like, we just got together and just said, what needs to change? What? Because a lot of times we're stuck in our own groove, can't see, you know, working hard, doing those two jobs, and we can't see beyond what our own issues are and can't see that it's systematic. So so people tell their stories, and then it was me and Tom Horgan and Ali Shaw who got together with management and basically told them, like, you have a problem. You've known you had a problem with retention. You've known you've had there because there are no systems in place to mitigate any of this stuff, that every news organization will center towards whiteness just because of what management looks like and what the newsroom makeup looks like. You're going to default towards yourself, towards whoever the majority is. And so we actually met them in person because we thought that would have more power, and had some frank conversations about showing them where the problems are and then giving them anecdotes about those problems. So, you know, since we had those conversations with everybody, we were able to really sort of pinpoint areas like, we have a retention problem because when so-and-so goes and asks for, you know, either a new job or a new beat, it's, you know, it's a hard place for them to navigate. Maybe they don't feel comfortable with asking because they're the only one. Maybe, you know, so there's a lot of things that happen around it. So we were able to really sort of pinpoint all the places, either in new hires that come in, regards with retention, story choices and how that's viewed, just all of these different ways to that you can slice it, and then we were able to give like actual anecdotes for each, and I think that really sort of set the tone for them. And then we were able to, with our group, go through and say what, you know, we can complain all we want, but what are the solutions to the problems that we have in our newsroom? So, I mean, we took, you know, I think there were 8 of us or so who worked on the document. We had one editor of the document, Marissa Evans, and then we presented it to, you know, our editor and the publisher, and we had another meeting with the publisher, basically, you know, doing that same thing, but I keep thinking that what new media organizations don't realize is how much money they leave on the table when they don't include us.
Girl, would you tell them about our buying power, please?
I mean, it's real. Like, they don't necessarily, when they think of audience, when they have that audience picture in their mind, it's most likely white. And what we were trying to tell them is that you need to have a broader picture when you're thinking about audience and how you focus your stories and what do you do and the complexity of those stories, right? And you can't get there without having more people in the room. You can't get there without having a more diverse management. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But structurally is the piece that I think we miss. Because, you know, in the 70s, there was a, you know, huge hiring of people of color. And then in the 90s, we did the same thing. Like, oh, my God, yeah, we don't have anybody. You know, our newsroom is white. We should probably hire some people. So there's a hiring that happens. But for some reason, you know, every you know, two decades, we get a resurgence of people in the room and then they leave, right?
Mm-hmm.
They either leave the industry or they leave and join what I like to call the conga line that goes throughout the nation.
moving
from place to place to find a home, right? And so, like, you know, when we came up with our solutions and we're thinking, how can we do this, that it's long-lasting and sustainable through crisis. And it has to be systematic. It has to be that there have to be reviews and a place where people can actually say what they want so that if they are, you know, if there's a white gatekeeper who, you know, has a hard time understanding what the needs of their staff is, then it's more public. You know, that whole idea around transparency, I think, is huge. So mm-hmm. that it's just not one person mm-hmm. making the decision for this one employee, that it's a group of people who can see what's happening and then make an educated decision about how to either grow that person or move them to someplace else. And keeping the thoughts and minds of what that actual individual wants in terms of their path. And so transparency is a huge part. It is a system of doing that changes, you know, we have to basically change the walls in order to make this work and make it be something that can go beyond the next 20 years.
And, you know, I just need to know where the courage and the strength comes from, because, you know, back in the day, we'd be just happy to get in the door, you know,
right.
You know, girl, don't ask me to help you get this job. Now I just got right. here. Let me get my feet in here. Let me see what's going on. But now, girl, we just like, you know, like my grandmother say, F it, you know, y'all going to let me go anyway. I'm going out in a blaze of glory. I got to make a change. I can't sleep at night knowing that things need to be different and I'm not doing anything to help get it there. I just really like the fact that you guys are solution oriented.
Yes.
How important was that? Because that's the piece I'm missing. Because, see, y'all got like eight of y'all. It's like three of us, and I don't know if two of them want to talk, so it's just like really me. So how important was that to give them solutions to the problem of the lack of diversity in the newsroom?
Yeah, I think it is, because if they had solutions, they would have fixed it already, right? Or at least the people in the room that knew that there was a problem, and they would have done something about it, but they don't know how. So we have to show them, because how can you fix something you can't see? So it was on us to sort of help them get to a place where, like, here are some ideas that we think will help fix our issues. And so, yeah, it is important. And it's just like, you know, in the George Floyd moment, Breonna Taylor moment, It was shocking to see people during the coronavirus basically put their lives at risk
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
go out in the streets to make change. And so why can't we? And it's just one of those where, like, you know, as a journalist, you're in the thick of things, and sometimes you have to step back and realize, like, this is the moment. This is the moment right now. And people are just tired, like, you know, because we've seen it enough. And there's enough people with institutional knowledge, especially at our paper, who have seen the ebb and flow, seen when the paper really, really embraced diversity in a stronger way and watched it disappear.
Gone. Deshaun, and, gone. CJ, gone. And, Maria, and so, gone. Raina, gone.
Exactly. 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 So, I mean, we're just tired. And there is, and it's not just us who see that, you know, the people of color in the newsroom. It's also, you know, the white men and women, especially white men and young women, right, who are seeing the exact same thing and saying, why? Why is our newspaper losing good people? Mm-hmm. And wanting to do something too. So I feel like there's just more support from, because it's a grassroots thing, right? It's just mm-hmm. like people who are doing the work are saying like, yeah, this is crazy. We need change. We need change.
And you know, people in the community are smart too.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be that you couldn't tell who was the editor or if this person was a person of color or from the LGBTQ community or, yeah. you know, how many people of color you had on staff in the newsroom or who your newsroom managers are or your station managers or, you know, your editors. You know, you didn't know who those people were, but we can go online and look that up. And,
yep.
and people know, well, I called the paper, but nobody came to the positive event that I had. So when they want to come out and send white reporter after white reporter after white reporter to do live shots, you know, across the street from my house where George Floyd was murdered, when I couldn't get them to come for my clothing drive, I'm
right.
frustrated.
Yes.
And
yes.
so I'm not going to watch that station anymore, or I'm not right. going to listen to that, you know, news station, or I'm not going to buy that paper because they don't really support my community. They're here in a crisis, but not here yes. in a crunch.
Right. And it is about that complexity. Like, it's not just coming to communities when things are wrong. I mean, every newspaper I've ever worked at, over the, I don't even want to say how many years I've been doing this stuff, you know, since college, right? You know, the thing that we always hear is like, you guys are showing up right now when things are bad. When are you here when things are good? And when we talk about diversity, we also talk about not just community-based, but like if we're doing a story on, I don't know, some... a new medical procedure that we're talking to experts who.
Girl, come on, don't You gonna make me just cancel the next guest, and you just gonna stay here with me the whole hour, girl. Let me tell you something. Before George Floyd, I'm telling my business. It's probably gonna be the last show. Thank y'all so much for supporting me. So before George Floyd, okay, before you know, ally became a hashtag to trend. I went in the office with all the bosses, girl, and I was crying. And I said, we got to do something different. I said, if you have a newsroom full of white folks and you need a dentist, you're going to get a white dentist. If you got a newsroom full of white men and you need a real estate expert or you need a money manager or you need somebody, a psychologist or a therapist, you're going to go get somebody you know. So that when the black people start appearing in your newscast, it's going to be a news release from the police. Because you don't have any connections in that community.
Correct.
And so you just cancel out Dr. Verner or Jason Clopton, the therapist, or, you know, Alba Gallman or any of those other, Marsha Pitts Phillips, who, you know, is a PR guru here in the Twin Cities. Yeah. Any of those people are canceled out because you don't have a connection to them.
Right. I mean, and then like, okay, so like we see that there's a problem, right? So the solution is you got to have a POC source directory. Where you have a database where you can input names of people that you've run across or that you've gone and
see.
And
y'all
out.
Smart. I just like to cuss and fuss and kick the door in, girl, and then go have me a glass of Grey Duck vodka afterwards and talk bad about them behind their back. See, y'all came. I come with heat. Y'all come with solutions. That is an excellent idea.
Well, I mean, it's just like, because what happens is that we throw up our hands on both sides and then nothing gets done. And I am tired of nothing getting done.
Amen.
Right? I things need to change. And so I need to be the change that I seek. Right. So by doing that, like, I'm like, here, you can do this. This is the thing that we can do. And hopefully that works, you know? But yeah, it has to be every piece of it, you know, for that fabric of like, why are we not talking to people in the disabled community? Like, there are, you know, they have jobs too, right?
Yeah.
They gotta go to work.
Right.
They come home and feed their kids. So,
and they're
like,
in a wheelchair, and they're doing
right,
in a wheelchair.
Right. So it's when we talk about diversity, we have to talk about everybody.
Yeah.
And how we need to make sure that all voices are included. And I think it's just important. I mean, it's just time for, you know, it's kind of laziness, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Humans tend to be, you know, go with inertia, right?
Yeah. Just keep on doing it. Just keep running around in that wheel. The hamster, just keep running around that wheel. It's going to turn for you.
Going. Yeah. And it's time to stop the hamster.
Girl, let the hamster out, girl. just let the hamster run around in the room.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Oh, girl. I just can't thank you enough. This has just been so... Girl, look, I thought this was this interview was for the people who listen to the show. This was for me, because not that I've been approaching it all wrong, because to bring it up is just, you know, a good thing. But
yeah.
Also, we need to be solutions-oriented in that whole person of color, you know, file with information and access and people is an excellent, excellent idea.
Yeah,
it's just a beginning. That's just a start. And it's just a drop in the bucket. We need to get some more people in here whose comb I can borrow and who got some cocoa butter on their desk. And...
Wait. That is real.
That's so real. Girl, I remember when I was at KSTP and Gerald Levert had just died. Remember, like, Gerald Levert died suddenly, right?
Yeah.
And so it came across the newswire. And I stood up in the newsroom to say, Gerald LaVert just died. And when I looked out, because I'm an assignments desk editor by trade, so I was working the desk.
Right.
And so I stood up, and, you know, the desk is up high and the newsroom is always down low. So I stood up in the desk and looked out over the newsroom, and I realized nobody knew who Gerald LaVert was.
Right.
And so I just sat back down and had that moment to myself when, if our newsroom was more diverse and inclusive, it could have been a moment for all of us, because this was a big loss in the Black community.
Yes.
You know, that's just a little thing. That's just the little things. And why we're so isolated and so segregated, even in the news business, is because, you know, we don't have the shared community that we need, because we don't have the diverse voices to share that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, like how we play, you know, Aretha Franklin,
mm-hmm.
how we, you know, so there are other things that if they don't have context with or understanding with, you can just be lost.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the sole voice saying, like, no, this is really actually important.
Yeah, this is how Sweet Brown gets on TV. Because
right.
If you got Black people in your newsroom, Sweet Brown never makes it on air.
Correct.
You know, if you got Black people in your newsroom and they see Sweet Brown, and the white people in your newsroom come in and they think it's funny because a Black woman with gold teeth, a wig, and a headscarf is a meme and a joke, and they want to put her on the air for clicks, the Black people in your newsroom are going to stand up and say, no. That's not going to make it on air. It might make it in your Christmas blooper reel. But we're not going to let nobody else outside of this newsroom see Sweet Brown. And there's going to be some slow singing and some flower bringing if it leaks.
Right. Or, you know, that idea of sort of like that laziness that I say that that a lot of people, you know, that is a part of human nature, where we are talking to one person in a community as that community's voice. And not making sure that we are talking to multiple people, you know, especially with new immigrant groups that come to communities.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually like one person that winds up being the spokesperson for
the
entire
community. Girl, if they call that man one more time, I'm like, hey, y'all, can we call somebody else? Baby, they got his number memorized. I'm not even going to call his name because I know he's tired of talking. I'm like, no, I'm not calling him. I'm not calling him. I got somebody else for you that you can talk to, but not him, not again. You just talked to him 2 days ago. How about get somebody else from that community because they don't all agree with him.
Exactly, exactly. It is the complexity of voice that's important, not just that we have a voice of a person of color for this story, but it is the complexity and making sure that you're getting different voices because, yes, because every culture is not a monolith.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
And that we have to respect that and be layered and rich with our reporting so that we are giving that to our audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, to everybody, to have better understanding,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Girl, okay.
Like we're a part of the education. Yeah. We're part of the education system, man.
I can't even do this show because I'm over here taking notes. You have been a blessing to me, to our listeners. Kendall Harkness from the Star Tribune, thank you so much for making a difference, not just in your newsroom, but in the stories that you tell for people who look like me and my husband and my children and you. I love you, girl.
All right. I love you, too. You take care of yourself.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.